I'm speaking today with Laura Ewing, who is running for a State Board of Education in District 7. Laura, I usually start by asking people why they run for a particular office, but I'm going to take a step back here and ask, what exactly does the State Board of Education do?
Really, they have five basic responsibilities. They are responsible for the standards, the objectives for the courses, which would include what we call now the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, or the TEKS. They also, secondly, are responsible for the tests, which are the tax test right now and then soon to be the end of course. Thirdly, they're responsible for the textbooks. So the standards that are set are then sent to the publishers every time there's a rotation, a textbook adoption rotation, and then those standards are put into the textbooks. And because the state of Texas as a whole orders more textbooks than any other state, what we put in our textbooks tends to drive the nation. The fourth thing will be graduation requirements. And then the fifth is the $25 billion permanent school fund.
Okay. So having established what the State Board of Education does, why are you running to be on the State Board of Education?
I believe that the majority on the board right now have run and are making decisions based on personal agendas that do not benefit all of our children. And as a career educator, I feel that I need to step in. I need to be on the state board to help swing it back to really taking care of the academic needs of all of our children and not just a few.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the textbooks, because that I think where the State Board of Education has been in the news lately has been over textbooks. There was recently a controversy over the way textbooks for writing, I think the writing curriculum, were adopted. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, the issue on that is that before every textbook adoption, you revisit the standards, the TEKS. And so the English language arts people were, the protocol is that a committee of experts is put together to revisit the standards, the TEKS, and then they revise them. And so it was the turn for English language arts. When they, the professionals spent 3 years revising the English language arts TEKS, and when they were through and they submitted it to the board, there was disagreement. And they set up a committee that took a look at it. They brought in some people from out of state, many of whom were vendors, who benefited by what they were promoting, I believe. So they revisited the TEKS, and they went through several meetings and even pushed the agenda back so that they would allow this subcommittee and these out-of-state people to work on the TEKS. And they, the last minute, when they had no more time left, they had to adopt the TEKS. And at the last minute, the subcommittee did a cut-and-paste model, did not have a chance for the TEA staff, the experts, to look at it. They did not have a chance for all the state board members to really revisit it. And most of them did not get the final revision until the morning of the vote. And they went ahead and voted on it because they had to follow that guideline so that the publishers would have time to incorporate it. They did a couple of things. One is they didn't understand that when you teach something, you need to revisit it every year. And what you do with, particularly with language arts, is that you learn your punctuation, you learn your grammar, you learn your comprehension, but every year you build upon it. But they felt like once you learn something, that you just leave it where it is and you don't need to revisit it. Well, what we know is the students are not going to remember that unless they have a chance to practice it. They left the idea of comprehension out, except for little spotty things. So if you know where to put the comma, know how to pronounce the word, the idea is that you comprehend. Well, that's not true. Comprehension is a whole different way of learning. And those standards, for the most part, were left out. Now, the problem with that is that that will then be left out of the textbooks, so the local districts are going to have to then figure out and spend their own money to augment teaching comprehension. The other thing is that we really have put in place, or the legislature said, we will not promote kids after third, fifth, or eighth grade unless they can read and do math. And these are the standards. Well, a big chunk of that is, do the students understand what they're reading? Can they make sense of it? And so it's going to be harder to incorporate comprehension, test for comprehension, and make sure our kids are on grade level if you, for the most part, have left comprehension out of the TEKS.
Now, I believe next up for the State Board is the science textbooks. What do you think is going to happen, and what should happen, ideally?
With the science textbook adoption, I believe what's going to happen is evolution is going to rule the discussion. And so what's going to happen is that instead of looking at the whole picture of what should be in the textbooks, what the standard should be, I think the issue is going to revolve just around evolution. And I think that we may see people, again, using personal agendas to write the standards and write and dictate what's going to be in the textbooks rather than what is good for all kids.
Well, let's play devil's advocate. Some people say things like, well, teach the controversy, or evolution is just a theory. How do you address that?
Well, I think, first of all, people have to understand that what is scientific theory does not mean, well, scientific theory means we have proven it, and it is a fact. And I think what's going to be set up is this controversy between those who believe in evolution and creationism. Well, as a faith-based person, I happen to believe that they both exist. I believe in the creation story, but I also believe in evolution, because evolution means simply how species or how any living organism changes over time. Right now, the big issue is that we're looking at what's happening with antibiotics, and germs that are changing over time are becoming resistant to antibiotics. Well, that is evolution. But a lot of people have a very narrow view of what evolution really means. And so what we're seeing on the forefront is a discussion of, do we have pro and con of evolution, pro and con of creationism? Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I, as a faith-based person, do not want bureaucrats and political people establishing what my view of creation is. That is something that I have my beliefs, and those are generated through, you know, my church beliefs. But I believe that evolution has a place in the science books because it is about how organisms change. A lot of people think the whole debate is about how humans evolved, and that's not addressed in the, if you go look at the biology textbooks today, that's not addressed. Evolution is the bigger picture. And that is not what is taught in our biology books today.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Permanent School Fund. I think a lot of people hear about that but don't really maybe know much about it. What is it, and what is the State Board of Education doing with it?
The Permanent School Fund, the management of the Permanent School Fund is the only thing in the Constitution that really dictates this is a job that the State Board of Education is to handle. The other things, the other responsibilities they have are legislatively mandated. The Permanent School Fund right now is valued at about $25 billion and is based on land holdings and the mineral rights that were given 100 years ago to the state that was to be used for public education. That money, it's all invested, and what happens is that income generated every year is what is used to pay for textbook adoption, and every year there is a different set of textbooks that are up for adoption so that it's not too expensive any one year. So every year there's something else up. And that money pays for the books that are adopted that year. And they go through a whole adoption process, and every child in public schools in Texas benefits from that adoption. Then there is about $100 to $200 payment for each student, depending on what the fund generates each year. So that, and that's in addition to what is adopted or what is paid for out of the textbook adoption. So it's a hugely important responsibility to monitor it, to manage it, to make sure that the investments are sound, that they are not being chancy, speculative with the investment. The bigger issue too is that we're 4.5 million children in the public school system, and we know that many people are moving to Texas, and Houston alone is going to see about 5 million people, an increase of about 5 million people. So we're seeing ever increasing population. So that $100 to $200, you know, we want to keep it even. We don't want to drop. And so they've got to make sure the investments increase. Then as you buy textbooks for more kids, again, you've got to make sure investments increase. So it's a very important part of our system.
Okay. You also spoke about the tax test as being one of the things within the state board's purview. Obviously, subject of standardized testing is kind of a controversial one. Where do you stand on this, and what do you want to see the State Board of Education do in terms of the tax test?
It's really a two-step process. The state legislature determines what grades are going to be tested. That's a legislative decision. And what will be tested in each of the grades. Then it is the State Board's responsibility to oversee the writing of those questions and the overview. And it's a very, very complex and an involved process that takes about 2 to 3 years to get that into place. And with the writing, the approval, the proofreading, and then the field testing, and then getting them out. The other thing is that they are responsible for setting the passing standards. And so that is a very big issue. I tell you what, one of the things that I would love to see, and this is more of a moral support, is that we're doing so much testing along the way to make sure our students are on level, that I would like to see us find some ways to return that time, a lot of that time, back to just good classroom instruction. The other thing is that is within the purview of the State Board, I believe, is that right now, for instance, the social studies test has 5 objectives, and the students have to do well enough on all the objectives that are tested to then pass the course, to pass the test, and then to graduate at the exit level. A concern I have is a student who I taught years ago, who at the time it was under TOS test, and you took your test when you were a sophomore, and then you had a chance to retake it 8 times before graduation. And she and I would talk about it, and she was so stressed because she couldn't pass the math portion of the test. One day she said, "Look, let me show you." And she pulled all the strips out that she had gotten from the state saying she had not passed the math test. She had taken it 7 times. She had one more time to pass it. But when I looked at it, she had passed every single objective at some point in time. She just could not hold it all together for one testing. What I would like to see is for that, if students are able to pass the objectives, then they don't retake those objectives, and if they fail the test, then they only retake the objectives they had difficulty with. And I think that would save us all money, it would save us all time, and I think we would see a lot of students be successful. If you pass the objective, you've proven your proficiency with it, so let's set up a better user-friendly system for our students. And as we take the test online and move in that direction, I think that is a more doable system to offer something like this.
And as I understand it, over the course of several legislative sessions, the legislature has increased and decreased the power of the State Board of Education over time. Do you think the State Board of Education has the right mission these days and the right amount of power to do what it's supposed to do, or would you like to see something changed?
I think that the mission of the majority of them is absolutely not in the right direction. It is causing very detrimental and negative effects for our students. I believe that their decision making, such as on graduation requirements and not including more career and technology, types of courses to account for science and math. I believe that we are seeing more students drop out. We're seeing big dropout, you know, increase in dropout rate. Some people say up to 50%. Depends on what statistics you want to look at. But the real concern that I have is that I believe they have overstepped their bounds. I believe that they are taking illegal action. There are two things. One is they sidestepped the protocol for how to adopt the English Language Arts standards. And when they refused to listen to the teachers and to the experts in the field, to spend 3 years putting together a very consistent and continuous flow of curriculum, they wouldn't listen to them. And they put in this cut and paste model instead that was not well thought out, was hurriedly put together. And that we will have to live with for the next 10 years because our textbooks will be adopted based on those standards. But also, one of the big issues was the Bible course. The legislature said we're going to pass that we want all states to offer a Bible course, I mean all school districts to offer a Bible course as an elective. Right now, any school district can offer it as an elective, but you know, Chisholm's bill was that all of them would offer at the high school level a Bible course. Well, that's, you know, I'm fine with that, as long as we put the right safeguards in place. And the state legislature, the committee, the House Committee on Public Ed, sent a letter to the state board and said, if you are required by the legislature to offer a course, you must put the TEKS in there. You must have specific TEKS. They didn't listen. And instead, they passed a Bible course, and they said, we're just going to have the generic TEKS that come under special topics type courses out of English Language Arts and Social Studies. So what happens is that the state board refused to take responsibility. So then the House on Public Education in July called a public hearing. And they had 5.5 hours of testimony, and part of what came out, that they were looking at the flawed English Language Arts reading standards, and they also brought out a document. And Hochberg said, held the document up and said, this letter was signed by Eisler, Republican, chair of this committee, and this document says you are to adopt specific TEKS. This is to be taught as history and as literature and or literature in that domain. You didn't listen. You must follow what the legislature said you are to do. We gave you these responsibilities. This is what you must do. They, oh yes, you know, we hear what you're saying. A lot of them weren't there, but those, you know, were hearing what you're saying. The next day, Hochberg came and spoke to the committee on instruction, curriculum instruction, the instruction committee, and he again reiterated it. They did not allow any testimony the day the full state board met, and they voted overwhelmingly to leave the establishment of the TEKS on the backs of the local school districts. And even the comment was made, we don't want to have a lawsuit against us. Well, they've now put into place the opportunity for over 1,000 school districts to have a lawsuit against them if they don't stay within the general guidelines. So I think that they threw the local school districts to the wolves. They violated what the legislature said. They again and again have not followed what legislative mandate and intent has specified for them to do.
Okay. Now you're from Friendswood, and you were on Friendswood City Council. Now, Friendswood is not high on my list of places that I think of when I think of places that elect Democrats to office. What was your secret?
You know, first of all, it's nonpartisan, and that issue was brought out in 2003, and people tried to say, hey, she's a Democrat, and she must be an evil person and wear horns if she's a Democrat. But I think the difference was that I had been very involved in my community and in my church, very, very involved. I was on committees. I was on the Charter Review Committee, on the Community Appearance Board for the city, very involved with mission work, and Church and Society Committee with my church. And I think enough people knew me and knew that I would make reasonable decisions. And so it was actually a three-way race. And I, when this letter came out saying, you know, don't vote for her, she's a Democrat, da-da-da-da, I thought, I'm not going to win because it is such a Republican area. And a three-way race, I got 51.78% of the vote. By 55 votes, those 55 votes kept it from going to a runoff election. And then I ran again in 2006, and it was just a two-way race. And the person, you know, both cases I ran against good people, but I won by a handier margin. And so people, I believe, realize that, you know, it's who you are and how you make decisions that is really the important thing, not a party label.
When people go to the polls this election day and they get down to the State Board of Education race, how do you want them to think about it?
Well, I like to think that we're going to add, my election would add the fourth R to read and write and arithmetic, and that is reasonable and responsible decision making. And what I want people to know is that it's considered a down ballot race, but it's really at the top of the ballot. And you'll have all the U.S. people, you'll have the at-large state people, you'll have the state-level judges and justices that will be above, and then will be the listing of my race. And it'll say, it won't say State Board of Education, it'll say member of State Board of Education. And it is a little hard to find in all of that mix. And then it goes to the state races, the state senate, the state reps, etc. So first of all, I want people to be able to find it on the ballot. But the second thing is I want people to vote for somebody who is a career educator. That doesn't mean that I'm just, you know, that I cannot oversee what is done. It means that I have great experience and expertise. I have a master's in educational leadership. I've served the last 10 years in a curriculum leadership position. And I have a great deal of experience, K-12, on working with teachers and helping them to be even more successful with the students. I understand what we need to be doing, where we need to go, how we need to do it.
All right. Laura Ewing, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much.